What's up, everybody? It is Mike with Whiskey Talk on this juicy Friday evening. This is episode 1, and I hope everybody had a wonderful week. If not, I hope your weekend gets better. This is a time for you to relax, unpack, and recharge. So I just poured me a bottle of Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey, and I got a few topics that I want to get into, and we'll get right into it here. So the first topic that I wanted to get into is Zach Wilson, quarterback for the New York Giants. Allegedly, Mr. Wilson, from what I understand, it looks like there was some leaked social media posts from an ex-girlfriend of his where she alleged that he had slept with his mom's best friend, which is crazy. First time I heard this story, I mean, the way that it was brought to me was that it was I don't know, it was presented in a way that it was gonna hurt him, but from looking around on social media and everything like that, I don't think it hurt him. I think his stock actually rose with this. you know how people can be, especially coming from a university or where he come from. I believe it was BYU. Don't quote me on that. I don't want to butcher that, but I believe it was BYU. So, knowing what I know, I grew up in the Southeast Idaho region, and there are a lot of LDS religious types here. That's what BYU school is about. It's the Brigham Young University, which is LDS based. So, you know, this news in my area may be shocking to some, but it's not too shocking. I mean, people are people. Dude's not perfect. Got caught banging his mom's best friend, you know. I mean, the story could be a lot worse. I don't know if the idea for the leak in mind was to destroy his career, but if you ask me, that's going to give him a boost, to be quite honest. It's going to give him a boost. So I think it's kind of funny, especially the way he's handling the whole thing. It looks like he's up somewhere in Idaho anyway with the team, and he had made a social media post along the lines of not having service, what's going on. So he had a funny sense of humor about the thing. So it's all water under the bridge. It'll blow over. You know, it's just a scorned ex-girlfriend. So you know, we've all been there. But secondly, what I wanted to get into was Stranger Things. If you guys haven't seen it, you may want to pause this episode and resume it later if you're not all caught up. And I mean caught up through season 1 through season 4. But I want to address the elephant in the room, which is Will and Mike. It was kind of funny because I was watching this episode. We watch this episode as a family. You know, I have a family of, I have 3 kids. I have 2 little girls and 1 son, and of course my wife. But we were watching this episode, you had the episode of season 4. There was a 2 parts, and there was the first of 2 parts on July 1st, I believe, when it came out. Don't quote me on that again. Again, guys, I gotta remind you that I'm here. I'm sipping whiskey, and I'm speaking my mind, all right? So things might get a little off the rails, but I'll try to keep it intact the best that I can, all right? But anyway, I think it was part 1 of the 2 part, the second part. And it was when Mike and Will are in the car, and they're going to get Elle. And Will decides to unveil this painting that he's been hiding since the early part of season 4. And he says that he tells Mike in the car that Eleven had pretty much given him the idea and had directed the painting from beginning to end, and he just kind of followed along what she said. But if you refer back to the early part of season 4, Eleven said that Will was working on a painting and he was very protective and he wouldn't let her see it. So she makes it very clear she had no idea what the painting was. But anyway, Will's in the car. He unveils the painting, and you know, if you're paying attention to episodes prior, you know, the writing was on the wall where this was headed. I didn't really, me being over dramatic about everything, and I'll admit when I'm wrong, but I didn't really see it this way. you know, looking back on it, I mean, it's pretty simple to put together. It's easy to connect the dots. You have everybody, all the main characters as far as the kids in their Dungeons and Dragons group, everybody's connected to a significant other of some sort. You had Dustin with his girlfriend. You got Lucas and Max. And you have Mike and Eleven. You know, and then you have Will is the third Will, all puns intended. But anyway, so you had Will kind of doing his thing, and he had made some references back to season three, and him and Mike had gotten into a fight, and Mike had said something along the lines of, it's not his fault that Will doesn't like girls or something. And so, you know, it was easy to gloss over, you know, because it wasn't really a whole lot to go off of. But everything, you know, the totality of everything that's going on, it's easy to connect the dots back. You know, so we're watching the episode as Will is explaining to Mike about the painting. He tells Mike that he's the heart of the group, and without Mike, everybody falls apart. And my wife looks at me and says, oh, he's in love with Mike. And I'm thinking, I don't know, you know. But at second glance, as I go back and I'm kind of looking through it and everything's kind of adding up, I'm thinking, okay, he is. And then, of course, at the conclusion of season four, the actor, I believe his name's Noah Schnapp or something. I'm probably butchering that name. I'm terrible with names. But he did kind of confirm that, more or less, that Will has feelings for Mike. And so that's kind of, you know, looking into that episode, you know, Will's expressing his feelings towards Mike through the idea of Eleven. So he's basically saying, you know, without you, everything falls apart. And he's basically saying that Mike makes Eleven feel good, even though she's different, along the lines of that. When you go through it and you revisit that scene, it actually appears that he's pouring his heart out. He's actually kind of disguised himself behind Eleven, but he's really making reference to his feelings. So it's kind of a crazy scene, you know, when you see him turn and look out the window and he's holding back tears, you know, and his brother's looking at him through the rearview mirror, you know, and his brother's got tears in his eyes because he understands what's going on. I think his brother knows, you know, but at some point him and Will have kind of grown apart, so they haven't really had a opportunity to discuss anything. You know, and later on in the episode, again, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it, I would stop and go back and watch it. It's been out for a month, for God's sakes. So, you can't expect everybody to hold back their spoilers. We got to talk about it. We got to talk about it to somebody. So, but Will's kind of, Jonathan's looking at him. He can see that his brother's hurting, and he doesn't entirely know why, I believe, but he knows there's something going on. So it was kind of a moving episode. You feel bad for Will in a way, but you see how much he actually cares for Mike, because he sees how much Mike cares for Eleven. So he's just kind of trying to push Mike in the direction that Mike's wanting to go. You know, Mike is friends with Will. He doesn't have the same feelings that Will does. He's in love with Eleven. So it's going to be interesting going forward. And I had kind of kicked the idea around. I was telling my wife, okay, I go, you've heard it here first. And, you know, I haven't really come to a conclusion as to what I think is going to happen. Initially, I thought Will may end up becoming a villain, but, you know, he's been such an intricate part of the series and the group, and he's such a lovable character. He's just a bigger part of any. So I don't think that's going to happen. You know, my theory going forward for season five, I would assume Will, because he is somewhat connected to the shadow creature at the conclusion of season four. Spoiler alert. He gets the hairs on his necks. I don't know if you guys following Stranger Things at this point, you know, Will's kind of able to detect when a certain entity is near. So I'm kind of like on season four, when Vecna would come, the lights would flicker. When he was in the parallel part the parallel location of the our current universe. But Will's able to detect another creature. So there's a couple other creatures there. It's going to be interesting to see. You know, I kind of kicked the idea around of the painting that Will had drawn. There's three heads on there. You know, really, if you kind of look back on it, you had the shadow creature, and then you had the mind flare and Vecna. So, you know, maybe it's kind of foreshadowing, I guess you can say, where you have the three crazy supernatural beasts that they've been battling for the last three seasons. So it's going to be interesting to see season five. I'm anxious. Hopefully it's out in a timely fashion. We were so impatient waiting for this one. God damn, we got to a point where we almost didn't give a shit. As harsh as that is to say, I didn't really mean that. We definitely do care. We definitely do care. So it was great. It was a great season. It was touching at the end. The whole deal with Max. It was a heavy, heavy, heavy season. You know, and the way they played it was brilliantly. They kind of had to they looked like everybody was going to fail as Vecna's talking to Eleven in the Upside Down. And everybody is at they're just at the bottom of whatever battle they're dealing with. You have Hopper and the Demogorgon. You have Lucas getting his ass whipped by the stupid jock dude that everybody hates. I can't even think of his name right now, but you guys know what I'm talking about. So they bounce back. Everybody starts fighting back. So it was a really cool scene. It kind of looked like hope was lost, but they bounced back. So looking forward to future episodes of that. And hopefully it's out within a timely manner again. It's not 20 years and everybody's all grown up. You barely recognize Dustin. Dude looked like young Arnold Schwarzenegger in a ball cap. But anyway, so shout out to all the Stranger Things heads out there. I know everybody's on it. And can we just address the second elephant in the room? That season four, made that song Kate Bush running up that hill. That episode where Vecna's chasing Max through the Upside Down and that song's playing. That's a great scene. It's one of the best scenes I've seen in recent memory. Probably, I put it up there with the top three scenes I've seen. But let's not act like that's a good song. To be quite honest, Stranger Things made that song is not very good. If you're not watching it alongside that or anything that has to do with Stranger Things, that is not a good song. This is not a popular opinion at this point. I bet you it was a popular opinion in the 80s when it dropped, but it is not a good song. That song is just bad song. It's a bad song. So, anyway, moving on from that. You guys got to give me a minute. I got to take a sip of this screwball. This is amazing. It's good. I know there's probably some whiskey connoisseurs that are thinking, "Screwball ain't whiskey." I mean, come on. I mean, what's classified as whiskey? It says whiskey on the fucking bottle. So, it's a little sweeter. You know, it's a little sweeter than a traditional whiskey. But, you know, I got some traditional whiskeys, you know, in the shelf back there. I got some good stuff. So, we'll brush that out. But right now, we feel like some Screwball. So, anyway, the second thing I wanted to address is Logan Paul, and he had a match scheduled August 6th between him and Tommy Fury, and for the second time, Tommy Fury wussed out and pulled out of the fight. And I don't know how this is it was written all over the wall that Tommy Fury didn't want this fight. If you look at Tommy Fury's last couple of fights, I know he is a legitimate boxer. If you, in the grand scheme of things, where they like to say that Logan Paul, excuse me, not Logan Paul, but Jake Paul is not a boxer. If you look at any, I mean, you can take your pick. You could take your pick of the litter of whatever professional boxer you'd want to pick. And you look at his first few fights as a pro and you look at the records, they're pretty much fighting tomato cans to to pad their resume, to work themselves up. I was one of the dudes, I'm not even gonna lie, I was one of the dudes that was, you know, thinking this is all a gimmick, this is just entertainment, and it is, it's entertainment. The first time, I didn't really pay too much attention to Jake Paul until it was, I believe it was the Triller event, and he was the undercard under Roy Jones and Mike Tyson, that glorified sparring match that they had, but he was the undercard of that, and he boxed, what the heck is his name? It was ex-basketball player. Everybody's screaming at me right now if you're listening to this. I can't remember his name, but anyway, the ex-basketball player. But I was impressed kind of by how he conducted himself in the ring. I'm not a boxing expert by any means, but I've been around the game. You know, both sides of the family, my mom's side and my dad's side, they're all boxers. I've grown up watching boxing. And most people that, you know, that are around combat sports or watch boxing, they're able to, you know, your eyes can tell, you know, whether somebody moves, like Joe Rogan likes to say, there's a fluidity of movement, but Jake Paul has a fluidity of movement that looks like he's been doing it for a lot longer than has said he's been doing it. So Nate Robinson, the name come to me. It was Nate Robinson that he knocks out that night. But anyway, he had a fluidity of movement, the way that he executes everything that he does in the ring. And he knocked him out with a check hook, which is pretty difficult to execute by boxing heads. I'm not a boxer, but it's difficult to execute, I believe. It was a pretty high-level punch. Knocked him out cold, right? So he goes on to fight Ben Askren next, who's no slouch. Ben Askren has held belts in, you know, several organizations. In MMA, granted, he is not a striker. He's not a striker, but he knows how to work around striking. He's been in the ring with the best MMA strikers that MMA has to offer. And he's been able to weather the storm to do his thing. He's a high-level wrestler, but he's been able to avoid the major strikes. So, knocks Ben Askren out in the first round. Okay. On to the next. The next test is Tyron Woodley, right? And I'm thinking, I've been a Tyron. I'm still a Tyron Woodley fan. Tyron Woodley is a beast. He's way past his prime, but he's always been a beast. Dude stays in shape. He's got freak genetics. He's just a freak. In that first round, this was the big test for Jake Paul, you know. And I'm watching this fight, and I'm thinking, man, this guy is. Again, his fluidity of movement, his boxing IQ, his ring generalship, everything was there. He looked really good. He controlled that fight. There was Woodley, I think, only had one moment in the fight where he had hit Jake Paul with an overhand on the temple, and Jake kind of stumbled back through the ropes or whatever, and Woodley didn't capitalize on it. He kind of just stood there, which was weird. Especially being an MMA guy, he's not used to knocking people down and waiting for them to stand back up. But he didn't really jump on him. He didn't capitalize on him at all. But he was losing that fight. He was losing pretty much every round of that fight. That was really the only round that he had won decisively. I think he had edged out another round just to Jake Paul's inactivity. But so you have that fight, right? Jake Paul wins a decision, which I'm thinking at this point, I'm like, okay. All right, I give this guy his due. I'm going to give him all his due. You know, you can't doubt this dude anymore because Tyron Woodley is an ex-UFC champion, a future Hall of Famer. The caliber of guys that he's beaten in the UFC, you can go down his resume. I'm thinking, okay, I'm this is it. I'm done doubting this dude. But you still had a couple of the people saying, well, Jake Paul's bigger and he's heavier and he needs to fight a boxer. And I get it, right? Tyron Woodley is not technically a boxer. He's a wrestler, but he is an MMA striker. And most of his fights that he's won in MMA were through striking. He's very powerful. He's got power in both hands. So you can't take anything away at this point, right? So set up the fight with Tommy Fury. Fight falls through. Tyron Woodley steps up on short notice. So it's Tyron Woodley, Jake Paul, 2. And I'm thinking, okay, Tyron Woodley had a moment the first round. again, I'm still not completely sold. I get that Jake Paul's legit now. I get it. I'm giving him his due, but Tyron Woodley's just, you know, he's a Hall of Famer, been around the block. I think he's going to capitalize on the things that he missed out. I'm thinking he's probably going to try to take more chances, take the fight to Jake Paul. So the rematch kicks off. You know, we're watching it. It's a pretty boring fight. Tyron Woodley's not taking any chances. And in actuality, this second fight, he's fighting a lot more timid than he did the first fight. And it was a boring fight, to be quite honest. It was a boring fight. I was actually dozing off. And I missed the punch that turned Tyron Woodley's lights out. What woke me was Mauro Ranallo yelling into the mic, "Mamma mia!" That's the shit that woke me. And I look and Tyron Woodley is face down, ass up on the mat. And I'm thinking, what the fuck just happened? So I pick up the remote and I rewind it. And catch that overhand right that Jake Paul just cracked Woodley. It was crazy. And he just stiffened up and fell to the mat like Apollo Creed on Rocky IV. It was nuts. So at that point, I'm thinking, okay, all right. At some point, we got to, not even at some point. Now we have to understand that this kid is the real deal. And so I get all the hate that he's getting. I do and I don't. You know, he's had a YouTube channel. It's not like he was brought up in some, you know, in some fortunate rich family. You know, he was a YouTuber along with his brother, and everything he got, he earned, you know, as well as going to Disney and doing whatever short stint he had done there. But you gotta understand now, at this point, we just gotta stop calling him a YouTuber. He is a bona fide boxer, and he has proved it. And the dude has power in that right hand. That he's got power to the likes of probably as good as anybody we've seen. So at this point, we just gotta tip our hats and give him his due. I get it. You don't have to like him. I mean, he does have, he's still, you know, an entertainer. So he's carrying over a lot of what brought him to the dance in terms of YouTube videos as a YouTuber. But I mean, you can't not respect everything that this kid's doing. I mean, the memes that he puts out, he's active, he's engaging, he's bringing an audience to boxing that just never really gave a shit about boxing. He really is. But I mean, at this point, even the people at this day and age, even the people that care about boxing don't really care about boxing. It's dying. Boxing is dying, and he's actually breathed new life into the sport of boxing. He's made people care about boxing. And Mike Tyson's even said it himself. He's made a lot of people care about boxing. Because prior to that, I mean, what was anybody saying? You had Deontay Wilder that nobody really... He didn't get the credit that he should have got. He didn't get the spotlight that he should have got being a champion here in America. And he's knocking everybody out, knocking him into another dimension. But you had Anthony Johnson. Anthony... I can't... See, I'm telling you, this is whiskey talk, ladies and gentlemen. But it is, I'm drawing a blank. Anthony Joshua. There we go. I knew it was going to come to me. It was going to come back. But you had Anthony Joshua, who held a belt. And then you had Tyson Fury, who was a lineal champion. So you had three belts. Okay, and Fury and Deontay are duking it out amongst them. Anyway, not to get too much off topic, but those were the three that was the only thing that was going on in boxing. And that matchup and that buildup is no longer there because Anthony Joshua was lost twice. He lost to Andy Ruiz, and then he lost to Usyk. So he don't even hold a belt at this point. So, you know, nobody cares. So basically what I'm getting to is Jake Paul has made people care about boxing. So with everything that he's done, I mean, you can't tell me that time where he snatched off Floyd Mayweather's cap, got your hat, and he's running around as Floyd Mayweather and his bodyguards are whooping his ass all the way to the bathroom. That shit was hilarious. You can't tell me that if Jake Paul hater or not, that was not brilliant. And to lead a little bit more into this, you would think with Floyd Mayweather doing the boxing deal with Jake Paul's brother, who he failed to pay, but that's another topic for another discussion. He wasn't calling Jake Paul's name. You would think that after that public display of embarrassment that Jake Paul is running around and he's showing Floyd Mayweather's head. Floyd Mayweather looked like he's aged 20 years in the last 5 years. He's mad as hell, running around, cussing and screaming. You would think that Floyd Mayweather would be calling for that fight right away. But Floyd Mayweather is a smart businessman, and he's been pretty quiet. He hasn't mentioned Jake Paul's name at all. Only thing that's going on is the discrepancy and the drama between him and Logan Paul, who he allegedly failed to pay. I guess it remains to be seen what happens with that. So we'll just stay in tune, and obviously with our next whiskey talk, if we get any information going then or going forward, we'll definitely talk about it. But again, Mayweather wasn't calling for that fight. Mayweather is a smart businessman, and he knows, and I know that Jake Paul is a lot bigger than Mayweather. Logan Paul is a lot bigger than Mayweather. Logan Paul is bigger than Jake Paul. But Mayweather was not calling for that Jake Paul fight. He had all the free publicity he could ask for, which would have built the fight even more. Especially after that was actually piggybacked off of Floyd Mayweather and Logan Paul, their tour to promote the fight. Jake Paul, you know, he jumped in and stole his brother's spotlight. But Mayweather didn't jump all over that. Mayweather's smart. He knows that that's a threat. More than a legitimate threat at this point. And that's not to diminish anything that Mayweather's done. Mayweather's had an amazing career. Some may argue he's the greatest of all time. But he's past his prime, and he's significantly smaller. So August 6th, you got Jake Paul and Haseem, I'll be butchering this name too. It is Haseem Rockman Jr. He's a son of a prior world champion. His father had actually knocked out Lewis Lennox. This whiskey, I'll tell you. Lennox Lewis. So his father knocked out Lennox Lewis, which Lennox Lewis did later avenge that loss. Come back and won by knockout, I believe. I don't have the data here in front of me, I think, but I believe it was by knockout. So anyway, Tommy Fury pulls out the fight, and Rockman Jr. steps up to fight Logan Paul. Excuse me, not Logan Paul, Jake Paul, Jesus. Jake Paul, August 6th. And it's interesting. I'm kind of looking at the press conference and everything, and I don't know much about Rockman Jr. But I'm telling you, everything that you can pull up on YouTube, his highlights, and I'm not trying to disrespect him at all or crap on anything he's done or accomplished. From what I understand and everything that I've seen is he's had over 100 amateur fights. And his record's 12-1 as a pro, I believe. But his highlights are not impressive, to say the least. And I know they're just trying to sell this fight, saying that Jake Paul is fighting the bigger man on short notice, and it's a bigger threat and all that. But Jake Paul's a smart dude. He's a businessman. He knows he's got to keep this train rolling. And it rolls a lot better and a lot faster if he stays unbeaten. So, yeah, it's a bigger threat. He's a legitimate boxer. He's not an MMA guy. So it'd be interesting to see what everybody says if Jake Paul does come along with the win. I'm thinking Jake Paul. So my opinion, just a quick prediction of the fight, looking into the future here. Looking over Haseem Rockman's highlights of his fights, I don't see anything there. And this is just the eye test. That's all, you know, is really all you can really do for boxing. I don't see any way that he threatens Jake Paul in any form or facet. I do not. I think Jake Paul gets him out of there. I think Jake Paul wins in dramatic fashion. I think he knocks him out. unless Rockman Jr. decides to play it safe and clinch him and hug on him all night. But I think Jake Paul gets a knockout. I really do. So I'm calling it Jake Paul by knockout. But anyway, this is we've been here for 30 minutes. I'm not going to try to keep you guys very long. This ain't the Joe Rogan Experience, although I'd love it to be. But this is the conclusion of Whiskey Talk and the conclusion of my glass of Screwball. So I hope everybody enjoyed the show. I will be bringing you hopefully another episode. Once a week is the goal, but you never know with life and how stuff happens. But I will be trying to bring you guys an episode once a week at the bare minimum. You know, and if anything else pops up, we might do a short clip just to address something if there's anything interesting that we just can't wait to be covered. So, again, at the conclusion of this, I want to thank everybody for listening, and I hope everybody has an amazing weekend going into your week and have an amazing week, and we will see you next week.